that went forward to him was I drafted. It's big, obviously signed it. It called for a very cautious presentation, and that is to say, simply to review for Ambassador Chai the negotiations that had been carried out to date. He was to indicate his commitment to normalization. And then I used this as an opportunity to brief him on the state of play in the negotiations and what we thought loomed ahead in your remaining sessions, what the subtle issues were. You may remember that I personally was always somewhat apprehensive that if we lost the president's attention at any point, he might introduce a nuance that we had not been building toward. So we had to keep him on this path. And what he did was take the background part and what's looming ahead, therefore, what was for his information, the arms sales business, and I tagged for him, this is clearly coming up, it's going to be the important thing. And he just took the whole memo and just put it all out on the line, bang, 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 and just did so with finer wording than I think we could have ever provided him.
I'm not sure that it was sent to Peking, because the next day, the 20th of September, I left for the U.S. I came somewhat early for the meeting of the U.N.
Maybe we gave it to you when you came to the U.N.
That
may be better.
I was in Washington before.
I think that's where you saw it. But we eventually cabled you the text. I remember cabling you the text, but I think you requested that that be done upon your departure. Maybe that was it.
Yes,
because you had a text in Peking later.
Yeah, I went first to Rochester, Michigan, and then from there to New York. I wrote on October 2nd at the UN Plaza Hotel in the afternoon, Holbrook, Thayer, and Oxenberg. We must have been talking about the meeting that was scheduled for the next night.
Yes, we went over Vance's talking points. This was a very important. This, given now the background, you will appreciate maybe that this was Harry Thayer's first involvement in the normalization negotiations, and I chose not to fight it, but Dick. Said, well, obviously he's going to come up. And then the question was, the president's instructions were that the desk officers are not to know about it. And Harry said, and Dick said, well, Harry has to be present for this particular meeting. So I thought, fine, but that was his entry into the scene.
Did we go into normalization at length? I don't think we did.
No, but we referred to the negotiating record. Supposedly Harry didn't even know the negotiations were taking place. But this confirmed to him that they in fact were taking place. He had not seen in written note. Roger Sullivan had been brought in. I have tremendous respect for Roger, and I brought Roger in to help draft the fourth instruction to you. And he was on board, but he always came to my office. And then Harry started from this time on.
Now, Roger was?
Deputy Assistant Secretary.
Right. And he came to China somewhere in this period. He and I pretended with each other that this was something we couldn't talk about. I didn't know that he was involved, and we had meetings down in the conference room, and he didn't set me straight, because
his involvement was on my responsibility.
I see. Because I acted as though nothing was of consequence was going on. Although, whatever proof he was with, it was clear he knew better.
It could have been a congressional. It would have been on your list.
Could have been.
He did not go with Schlesinger, I know that.
And then on the morning of the 3rd, I went out with Sybands to Brownell's apartment to get fill in on the his findings relative to the Mutual Defense Treaty. What was the name of the man who was then on the Taiwan desk? He subsequently became an ambassador.
Ambassador to Papua New Guinea.
Right.
Harvey Feldman.
Harvey Feldman. He was there. I didn't know Harvey.
Harvey Feldman was at the Brownell conversation?
Yes.
I'll be damned.
And I was very...
What the hell was he doing there?
It's the first time I met him. I was very on edge about it, very frankly.
Well, you know the Brownell conversation leaked. Did you know that it leaked?
No.
I'll be damned. I never knew he was there
yes,
for
he
that.
Was there. Yeah. And then, when we got back to the hotel...
You had a right to be on edge with that. I was never terribly impressed by him. He was also a very strong pro-Taiwan type.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Who was responsible for his being there? I have no idea. I think Dick was there.
Dick must have.
And I think I may have expressed some anxiety about it to Dick. I got some answer, well, it clearly involves them, and they have to know. Of course, this was not with any reference to any negotiations necessarily going on
right
then, but when, as, and if.
God darn, but do you know the Brownell thing leaked?
No, I don't.
The story came out, and what we said, and Brownell assured us it was not from his office. I don't think I knew Harvey was there.
Then we came back to the hotel, and from 10 to 11, you and I and Secretary Vance sat down, and my notes do not indicate that Hobart was there.
I cannot believe that the three of us met without Dick Holbrooke there.
I wonder why I would put with Secretary Vance and Oxenberg.
Unless he had some other meeting. But we did go over his talking points.
Right.
And over his meeting with the president. That may be where we debriefed you for the first time on President Carter's meeting.
Probably. And of course, we went out that night to the Chinese mission.
That's an important conversation, as I recall. But my memory is very vague. But I recall that now we were really beginning to approach the arms sales issue, right? This was, and what level of explicitness would
and
we
also,
need from the Chinese?
Based upon what Brownell had said, Vance had come down completely on terminating the treaty by its terms and not abrogating. That was part of our discussion. And then, of course, the... What did we expect when we went to the mission that night? We expected to go right into dinner, didn't we, or just have a short meeting?
A short presentation with a reference to the negotiations then underway. Tour, global tour, and then a presentation about an hour, I would guess.
It lasted a long time, and it was certainly a bleak atmosphere. Wei Hua Hua. Laid down what seemed to be a hard and fast, absolutely not with regard to arms sales, but the pitch I think we were, I was certainly getting was that it would block everything. Who was there with Huang Hua from Peking? He was the man who...
Well, I know that Chai Zemin came up, and Chun Chu, the ambassador to the UN, both were present.
This man was from Peking. Wouldn't have been Lin Ping, would it?
I do not remember.
He didn't leave for Australia until the beginning of November. But he came up to me and asked when I would be back in Peking. And my response was, in about 2 or 3 weeks. Why? That's when he said, well, we need another meeting. Which... relieve my worst fears. The door may be shut, but it wasn't locked. And so that I felt by that inquiry somewhat reassured. But it was certainly a dismal meeting.
Although I thought that Tsai helped make it that, because you remember that what became really was a test of will between these two men as to who would be the first to pick up the folder on the bilateral negotiations. And on a matter like that, one need not get into a test with Huang Hua. That's I guess my basic feeling. Although I think Tsai won.
Well, their chemistry always was bad. It certainly was bad that night. And Huang Hua did not go out of his way to be the gracious host by any manner of means. It was after 11 o'clock before we went into dinner.
That's right. Oh, we were down at the end of the table. We were at the, not the end of the table, but the end of these chairs. I was dying down there, wondered, and Harry Thayer and I began to pass notes to each other. Were we invited for dinner or not?
Huang Hua, too, seemed, when he made his tour of the globe, seemed to be aiming to take just as much time as Secretary Vance had taken. As I remember it, Tsai was saying some things which could have been new to the Chinese.
Yes.
But Huang Hua didn't say anything.
His presentation was carefully drafted. It was an effort to be informative. He tried to debrief on the Camp David Accords. He tried to talk about where we stood on the SALT negotiations. He talked about the evolution of our policy in Southern Africa, particularly with respect to the Rhodesian question. We tried to get into some discussion of Southeast Asia, as I recall, but the whole discussion was just desultory. But what if you recall what is that after the tour was completed, going from Soviet Union to Japan, and then Huang Hua responded, the key was that instead of turning to the bilateral, then Vance said, maybe we better get back to Africa. and they got into a discussion of the situation in Morocco. Remember the...
Yes.
And the liberation movement and the problems with between Algeria and Morocco.
Polisario.
Polisario problem.
Then I went to Washington, and on the 5th, late in the afternoon, I show a meeting in your office with Holbrook and Thayer.
Where next?
Pardon?
The issue was where next? What was the readout of the meeting at the UN? How are we going to broach the arms sales issue?
Right. And then I went out to Langley and saw both Stansfield Turner and Frank Carlucci. Okay. I did, but... I had a session with both Bob Berglund and with Schlesinger, both of whom were getting ready to go to China. And then on October 11th, I saw Dick Holbrook at 9, and then I saw you at 9:45. And then saw the president in the afternoon at 1:15. In between time, had lunch at Perklo.
It was a busy day.
Yes. And Chidzamin's wife and Sharon, almost from the first, have hit it off together. She went with me to the White House. In fact, as I remember, the president had sent me an indication that she should come, that he would like to see her. And she joined us at the end. But as we're leaving Perklo, we left before the luncheon was over, but they knew where I was going. And Mrs. Chidzamin, as we're walking through the lobby, she said, "Are you going with him into the meeting?" And Sharon said, no, during the meeting I'll wait in the lobby. Well, she said, "Say a prayer for him." And when she told me this, I said, "Did she say it in a joking fashion?" No, she said she was deadly serious. "Say a prayer for him." Because, of course, they knew that it was a critical meeting in terms of the relationship.
Well, you know, that's fascinating. What I learned from Lucian Pai this weekend, that Madam Lee, attended missionary school in Fengzhou in Shanxi province. That school and the whole missionary complex, including a hospital, was run by Lucian Pai's father. And Art Hummel's father also worked there. But Madam Lee has never really talked very much about her early associations with Americans. It is quite clear, however, that association goes way back.
And she's a different kind of Chinese wife. As far as I know, she has no official role in the embassy, does she?
No, I think that's right.
And she was always with him, and unlike other wives, her life was her husband.
That's right. Well, I want to talk to you about that day. Let's break off here, because that day was an important one, and your conversation with the president was important, and I'm also curious as to what you had, if you can recall, your conversation with Dick was about before you came over.
It's
So we'll just pick up there.